This is Audible.
Audible Studios presents Peachy Flippin' Keen, written by Molly Harper, performed by Amanda Ronconi.
Chapter 1. Frankie McCready dabbed one last touch of lipstick on Spud MacArthur's lower lip. Generally, she kept the makeup on her male clients a bit subtler than the treatment she gave the ladies. Families didn't much care to know that Grandpa was going to his final resting place with a layer of peachy keen on his lips. But Spud had tangled with pancreatic cancer during the last months of his life, so Frankie was having to use every cream and powder at her disposal to restore his healthy appearance. In his final months, Spud's cheeks had become gaunt and his skin sallow. Frankie didn't want that to be the last image his family had of him. They deserved to remember him as a ruddy-faced, energetic man, even if he'd been a bit of a jackass in life, particularly when it came to politics and his rabid support of University of Georgia's football team. Spud's condition reminded her uncomfortably of Uncle Junior, her mentor, her friend, who had suffered a similar death. Junior had been one of the best men she ever knew, and Frankie was blessed enough to know a wealth of good men. She hadn't dated one yet, because she was related to most of them, and there were laws against that sort of thing. Frankie gave Spud's prominent nose one last dusting of finishing powder and closed the lower portion of the casket lid. Spud's family had ordered a small casket spray in Georgia Bulldogs black, white, and red, but it was waiting upstairs in the chapel. Her great-uncle E.J.J., the head of the funeral operation at McCready Family Funeral Home and Bait Shop, preferred to add little touches like that at the last minute before visitations, so everything was perfect when the bereaved arrived. Mourners could fixate on tiny details, like a lapel bent out of shape, or ceremony programs printed on the wrong shade of off-white paper, and in their grief get wet possum mad at the disrespect to the deceased's wishes. That's when ugly scenes started. And when you became known as the funeral parlor that allowed knock-down, drag-out fights in the chapels, you started attracting the wrong sort of crowd. Frankie pushed the casket cart toward the elevator and pressed the button. "Goodbye, Mr. Spud. I will miss the boiled peanuts you made for Founders Day. I will not miss the way you added the Bulldogs and anybody dumb enough not to root for the Bulldogs to the prayer list every Sunday. But Lake Sackett won't be the same without you." She gently rolled the casket into the waiting elevator car and elbow-nudged the button that would alert EJJ and her father Bob that Spud was coming up. As the elevator doors closed, she stripped off her gloves and stretched her aching back. Spud was her fourth customer that day. Autumn was always a busy time for funeral homes, particularly in towns like Lake Sackett, where the population was heavily comprised of baby boomers. But this was getting ridiculous. They were going to have to hire her an assistant if things kept going at this rate. Even her father's near-miraculous organizational skills were being pushed to their limit. Frankie was definitely looking forward to the end of the tourist season in a few weeks. Her cousin Margot had recently breathed new life into the town by organizing one of the best Founders Day festivals they'd ever seen, and the marina side of the business was still experiencing the ripple effect. Over the last week or so, thousands of people from across the southeast had flocked to town to spend the last warm days of fall on Lake Sackett, shelling out for boat rentals, hotel rooms, food, beer. Most of the businesses in town expected to benefit from the boom somehow. It was embarrassing that something called the water dump had caused so many problems for Frankie's hometown over the years. A few years before, some dipshit with the Army Corps of Engineers had messed up when calculating how much water needed to be released through the dam at Sackett Point, and overestimated by a couple of million gallons, releasing about 10 times the water they should have. Lake Sackett dropped to record lows, just in time for a 2-year drought. No rain meant no water to replace what was lost. Less water meant less room on the lake for fishing boats and water sports. It meant more exposed, sun-baked shoreline, which made for some pretty depressing vistas. Depressing vistas meant fewer people renting cabins and buying groceries or visiting the fudge shop or the exotic jerky depot. The economics of it all had crept up slowly. At first, people just made do with less. They weren't able to repaint their stores or refurbish their rental cabins, which gave the town a shabby, weathered look. Fewer people rented those motel rooms and cabins because who wants to take their family to a shabby, weathered motel for a weekend? Tourists booked their holidays in towns where the water was abundant, and the locals seemed less desperate. So now, Lake Sackett was feeling the full financial brunt of multiple slow seasons. Businesses and restaurants were closing all over town. Families that had lived there for generations had moved away to find work. MacReady's funeral business wasn't entirely immune to this downturn. People still died, whether they were poor or rich. It was just a question of how much they spent on their way out. But the marina side of the business had definitely taken a hit. Fewer tourists meant less bait and tackle being sold, less food moving through the snack shack, less gas being pumped. Fewer charters meant Cousin Duffy and Aunt Donna had more time on their hands, which could prove dangerous. She could only hope Margot's efforts turned it around. Sighing, Frankie shrugged out of her lab coat and hung it on her hook, next to the one labeled Uncle Junior. It had been more than 5 years, and she couldn't bear to get rid of his lab coat. No one in the family really came down to her domain, so it was a little quirk she could keep to herself. It took a considerable amount of stubbornness and effort to maintain a private life in a family as big and involved as the MacReady's. But Frankie managed it by sneaking away to Atlanta for weekends, blowing off steam with drinks and dancing and other age-appropriate activities that reminded her she was alive. Just a few days ago, she'd met some friends from an online group for Pacific Rim fans and ended up at a nightclub in an old restored opera house in Midtown. Her family loved her, but they didn't need to know that she'd ground the night away with a complete stranger and then gone back to his apartment. Or that she'd waited for him to fall asleep and then Ubered back to her car, because she was not big on awkward morning-after conversations. And now she was thinking about sex in her workspace, which was a bit of a squeaky gray zone, professionally speaking. Frankie slung her heavy bag over her shoulder and took the stairs two at a time, a skill she had mastered even in her clunky purple wedge sandals. Her mother, Leslie, appeared at the top of the stairs, her faded ginger hair frizzled around her head in a backlit corona like Our Lady of the Snack Shack. She grinned down at her daughter. "Hey, honey, I was just about to pop by and see if you needed any dinner. I've got a pork shoulder in the crock pot at home, but if you need something now, I can whip up some chicken right quick." Frankie quirked her petal-bright lips, giving her mama a skeptical smirk. "Oh, yes, I'm starving," Frankie moaned dramatically, clutching her middle. "I used a considerable amount of energy trying to digest the enormous lunch you fed me today." "Well, honey, you're on your feet all day and need to keep your strength up," Leslie said, shaking her head as she wrapped an arm around her daughter. "Besides, your dad said this was a real busy day today. You needed a break," Leslie sniffed. Frankie shook her head. She loved her parents dearly, but they were one step away from shoving Frankie into one of those giant hamster balls for fear she might hurt herself tying her shoes. They weren't helicopter parents. That would imply they simply hovered, as opposed to being attached to her back. "I needed elastic pants after eating that triple-decker turkey sandwich," Frankie told her. "It had lettuce and tomato. It was practically a salad," Leslie argued, making Frankie snicker. Reaching the top of the steps, they walked through the open dog run area between the funeral chapel and the office. "You know, the doctor said he'd like to see you put on a couple more pounds." Leslie's voice trailed off as a thick, high-pitched grating sound caught her attention from the direction of the lake. "Do you hear that?" she asked Frankie. "It sounds like an outboard motor, but really far away." Suddenly, the noise was replaced by the hum of a vacuum cleaner. Frankie and her mother followed the sound down the concrete steps to the docks. They spotted Cousin Duffy standing in the open doorway of Jack's Tackle and Stuff with a shop vac, frantically swiping it across the shop floor. "What in the world?" Leslie tilted her head. But whether she was confused by outdoor vacuuming or the sight of Duffy doing housework, Frankie had no idea.
"I need some help here,"
Duffy shouted, his sweaty red-gold curls plastered to his head. Leslie and Frankie ran to the bait shop, stepping over hundreds of bait crickets as they stampeded down the wooden planks. Even over the rumble of the vacuum, they could hear the chirping of the crickets. Frankie looked inside the darkened interior of the bait shop and saw that the walls and floor seemed to be writhing, waves of tiny black-brown insects bouncing off every surface.
"Some jackass opened my bait cricket cage and all of my bugs got loose," Duffy cried.
Frankie grabbed a broom and started sweeping the little critters into a 5-gallon bucket. Leslie ran to the other prong of the 3-way dock to close the doors and windows to the snack shack, preventing a biblical invasion of her culinary kingdom. Duffy and Frankie started methodically gathering as many of the crickets as they could, returning them to the wire mesh bait cage.
Who would do something like that?
Leslie wondered as she jogged back into the bait shop. Duffy carefully emptied the shop vac into the wire cage.
Probably some tourist pissed off that he didn't catch his limit. I had a charter client threaten to sue me this week because he went the whole morning without catching a mackerel.
Oh, bless his heart. Did you explain to him that a mackerel is a saltwater fish and he was an idiot?
Frankie asked.
You know, I tried, but somehow it just didn't get through to him,
Duffy said.
As it is, I just lost another client scheduled for a sunset charter. He walked in, took one look at the bugs, and ran. I guess losing control of my shop to a bunch of invertebrates probably doesn't put me in the most professional light.
Frankie gave him a small side hug. This was part of the problem with having a customer service job. Even when the customers were enormous shitheels, you weren't allowed to slap them.
There was a reason Frankie didn't work with living people. This is why we can't have nice things,
she said with a sigh. Chapter 2. For the next hour, Frankie, Duffy, and Leslie worked to set the bait shop to rights. By the time they were done, Frankie's back and neck were slick with sweat, and her bright blue hair was soaked through. And she was pretty sure she had a rogue cricket creeping under her Attack on Titan t-shirt.
I'm gonna find the jackass who did this and introduce them to the business end of an embalming needle,
Frankie grumbled, wiping her forehead with her sleeve.
I'm gonna find the jackass who did this and introduce them to my anchor and some duct tape,
Duffy said, offering Frankie an ice-cold bottle of water from the bait shop cooler.
I'm gonna find that so-and-so who did this and I'm gonna introduce them to...
Leslie frowned as she tried to find a threat suitable for the situation.
It's okay, Mama, Frankie assured her. You can't help it that you're basically a Disney princess on the wrong side of 40.
Smart mouth, Leslie swatted at Frankie with the dish towel she'd been using to wipe down Duffy's counter.
Also, y'all owe the swear jar 50 cents. Hold still, you're gonna disturb the cartoon mice who sing back up for your power ballad,
Frankie told her, dodging her mother's snapping cloth. Leslie increased the frequency of her towel slapping, and Frankie howled with laughter, diving behind the counter. This was how EJJ found them, sweating, cackling, and covered in cricket bits. EJJ cleared his throat pointedly, bringing the laughter to an abrupt halt. Leslie hid the cloth behind her back while Frankie, biting her lip to prevent further giggles from escaping, scooted around the counter. How did her great-uncle-slash-boss manage to look so cool and crisp in a 3-piece suit in the lingering autumn heat and humidity? And manage to look so exasperated and yet amused all at once? EJJ gestured to the tall, barrel-chested man standing next to him. The newcomer was wearing a navy collared shirt and khakis ironed with military precision. He had dark blonde hair and had aviator sunglasses perched on high, sharp cheekbones and a slightly crooked, almost Roman nose. The nose didn't quite match up with the high forehead and square chin. But somehow the overall effect was very pleasant and seemed oddly familiar to Frankie. The expression on the stranger's handsome face was not amused or exasperated. He mostly looked alarmed.
There was a cricket stampede,
Duffy said, before pinching his lips together.
Sure there was.
EJJ cleared his throat to cover his laugh.
Y'all, this is the interim sheriff, Eric Linden. He's taking over for Sheriff Rainey, getting sworn in on Friday. Frankie, your dad thought he should come by to meet the county coroner.
The new sheriff took off the aviators, and Frankie's jaw dropped. She could have sworn he said his name was Derek, but that club had been really loud. The new sheriff was the hookup she'd Ubered away from without so much as a thanks for the naked memories. For the first time in her life, she realized how it felt to experience panic and mortification in front of her family members. Derek's apartment had been sparsely furnished and filled with boxes, but she'd assumed that he was a lonely guy who had just moved in and was looking for company. How in the hell was she supposed to know that he was moving to her town?
Nice to meet you.
Soon-to-be Sheriff Linden reached toward Duffy, for a manly handshake. Duffy frowned and shook the man's hand.
Actually, my cousin is the coroner. I'm just the bait guy.
You're the coroner? The sheriff rasped, turning toward Frankie.
The one I'm going to be working with.
The one and only in these parts. I'm Frankie McCready.
Unbelievable,
Eric muttered.
Don't worry, Sheriff,
she said, her voice so sweet it bordered on saccharine.
You're not the first person to have trouble seeing me as a competent professional, and you won't be the last. But I can present you with a pretty impressive list of credentials and certifications if it makes you feel better.
Eric did not laugh. Instead, he glanced at EJ Day and cleared his throat.
I was hoping we could sit down and go over some procedures for search and rescue, transport of remains, on-call status, that sort of thing.
Sure, she said, gesturing toward the funeral home. We can go to my office where the air conditioning is downright arctic.
No,
he yelped. Frankie jerked back from him. Eric's cheeks flushed. She squinted at him as if she could now detect some underlying crazy she might have missed in her sex-induced haze.
Actually, I was hoping I could grab something to eat while we talk,
Eric said, nodding at the snack shack.
It's been a long day, and Mr. McCready said you have the best fried chicken in town.
If this guy socially flailed any harder, Frankie was going to get whiplash. She didn't have the heart to tell him her mama had closed the snack stand and cleaned up for the day. She put her arm around Leslie's thin shoulders.
Well, anything deep fried, mama's the master.
Oh, that's your mama?
Eric glanced back and forth between Leslie's low-key, earthy beauty and Frankie's aggressively colorful appearance. And somehow he looked even more uncomfortable, which was quite the trick.
Leslie's my mama, and Duffy's my cousin, Frankie explained, in a tone that was probably a little condescending. EJJ is my great-uncle, but really my honorary grandfather. My daddy runs the office side of the funeral home. Uncle Stan drives the hearse. Duffy's mama runs the bait shop with him and books fish and charters. We're a real family operation.
EJJ clapped a hand on Eric's shoulder, which made him startle a bit.
So you're gonna have to be careful calling for a Mr. McCready. You're bound to get more people answering than you want. Might as well switch to a first-name basis now. I don't think I've ever heard of a funeral home and bait shop before,
Eric said, as Frankie led him down the dock toward the snack stand. Leslie followed at their heels, and if Frankie knew her mother, Leslie was trying to mentally calculate how long it would take her to warm up the fryer and cook enough chicken to fill Eric up so he'd stop being so damn skittish.
Oh, it's not that unusual around here to combine businesses that don't quite match up. One family member has a business space all set, another has ambitions, and the next thing you know, you've got a place like ours. McCready's just started earlier than most. After World War I, during the flu pandemic, my pawpaw John asked his brother Earl Jr. if he could move his expanding coffin building business into the back of Earl's bait shack.
Frankie was making a story of it, using the tall tales voice she normally used exclusively on school visits or while trying to freak out the macho types at the Dirty Deer. Eric seemed to be one big exposed nerve. He needed a bedtime story to settle him, badly. Judging from the rings she could see under his eyes now that his sunglasses were off, he needed a nap, too. And she couldn't do what she'd done to get him to sleep last time, not with her family within 10 feet.
Earl was selling worms, homemade lemonade, and sandwiches right here on the shore, making a pretty good go of it. And he and his wife Kate got along real well with John and his wife Ellie. The Spanish flu epidemic hit us hard in 1918. People needed caskets a lot more than they needed cabinets, and Ellie had a talent for helping her neighbors through their grief. Their kids added to the business, and their kids added more to the business. And now, here we are.
Leslie had ducked around them while Frankie was talking, nimble on her feet after years of working on those docks. She unlocked the doors to the snack shack, turning on the lights, the AC, and the fryer. She began prep work without even thinking, taking chicken out of the brine she'd prepared that morning, rinsing it, and dredging it through seasoned flour. Frankie motioned for Eric to sit at the early Coca-Cola-themed bar. He slouched against the red vinyl stool, as if the weight of the world came with him.
"So, what brings you to Lake Sackett, Sheriff?"
Frankie asked, attempting to keep her tone casual.
"It's pretty odd for someone without ties to the area to try to get hired on with the department, much less lead it. Hell, you can't get hired on at the jerky depot unless three generations of family can vouch for you."
Frankie didn't feel the need to comment on the fact that there was no way the county commission could promote from within. Local residents didn't feel safe with Lake Sackett's lone deputy trolling their neighborhoods at night with firearms unsupervised. Deputy Landry Mitchell once shot himself in the foot while getting out of the shower. He sighed as if weary of answering questions.
"I was just looking for a change of pace. A fresh start."
"From where?" she asked, as if she didn't have some clue.
"Atlanta PD,"
he said, in a tone that invited no further chit-chat.
"Are you from Atlanta originally?"
"Yes." "How often do you work with the sheriff's department?"
It seemed the introductory period of their meeting was over.
"Not often," she said. "I don't contact you unless there's a death I consider suspicious, which is pretty rare. You don't contact me unless there's a hunting accident or something like that. I'm the only operating morgue for 50 miles. Any important post-mortem tests beyond blood alcohol or gunshot residue, I send to the state police crime lab. I have a friend there who occasionally puts a rush on things if I promise him some of my mom's divinity candy."
"How long have you been county coroner?"
"I took the job about 5 years ago, when my Uncle Junior, the previous coroner, passed away. But he trained me himself, even before I graduated from mortuary school. I'm fully licensed, qualified, and duly elected."
"You ran unopposed?"
Sheriff Linden asked.
"No one else wanted the job," she said with a shrug.
"How old are you?"
"Nunya,"
she said, smiling sweetly.
"Nunya?"
"Nunya damn business. Didn't your mama ever teach you it's rude to ask a lady her age?"
He frowned at her.
"Not in a professional setting, no."
"Well, it's rude."
The frown deepened as he changed the subject.
"I've been looking around the office for records on the violent crimes and suspicious deaths over the last few years, and haven't been able to find anything."
Frankie winced.
"Yeah, that was part of the reason Sheriff Rainey was encouraged to retire. There was a bit of a rodent infestation in the evidence room, and it spread to the rest of the courthouse. Word got out that the sheriff was basically a hoarder, but the kind whose hoard leaks into his office. He'd take things into evidence and tell the owners they got lost in processing. He got the reputation over the years for being a bit of a klepto, but it turned out he just tossed the stuff into the evidence room and, God's honest truth, lost it. Same with files, tickets, court reports, basically anything that came across his desk. The whole thing had to be turned over to the state police for an audit. The only thing that saved our collective butts was the fact that we don't have a lot of crime here in Lake Sackett. I can work up a report on the suspicious deaths over the last decade, but I can tell you right now that it boils down to two incidents. A suspected poisoning in 2014 that turned out to be a wife who didn't know how to refrigerate pork products properly. And last year we had a moonshine still explode, taking out three members of the Gibbs family. Generally, any non-natural death in these parts involves someone operating a boat, ATV, or a vehicle that they have no business operating. Most of the time, beer is involved.
Frankie paused to watch him take a sip of her mama's sweet tea, prepared the proper southern way by stirring real sugar into the boiling water so the sweetness mixed evenly throughout the tea.
"If mama caught you with a packet of Splenda and an unsweetened tea, you better be diabetic, because otherwise you were getting smacked with a spatula."
Maybe he would show some sort of personality reacting to the tea. Maybe she could get some hint, something to help her figure this guy out.
Eric swallowed several mouthfuls without pause and set the glass on the counter.
No response, no wince, no smile. Maybe this guy was a robot?
Frankie leaned back on her stool and checked the back of his neck for a barcode.
Nope. It was probably on his ass. The apartment had been pretty dark.
"Don't suppose you know anything about the drunk driving stats?"
Eric asked.
"That's where you're gonna have to talk to your deputy, Landry Mitchell," she said.
Eric winced, and she added,
"I see you've met Landry."
"Yeah, I don't hold out a lot of hope there," he muttered, as Leslie slid a plate of golden fried chicken in front of him.
Thank you, ma'am.
Leslie's smile was almost as sweet as her iced tea. You eat every bite now. You look like you could fall over if the wind blew too hard. Frankie, honey, I'll see you later. You two catch up on your business. Eric nodded and dug into his chicken. Leslie shut the door behind her, and Frankie whipped her head toward him.
What in the living hell are you doing here?
I'm as surprised as you are. I'm getting the impression I'm just about as thrilled to see you as you are to see me.
Excuse me?
What kind of person just runs off in the middle of the night without so much as a shake on the shoulder and a, hey, I'm leaving, you might want to lock your deadbolt?
Are you unfamiliar with the one-night stand procedure? She asked. It's I came, I saw, I got out with as little fuss as possible. Not I came, I saw, I neglected to mention I'll be following you to your hometown and working in a close professional capacity with you for the foreseeable future.
It didn't strike you that I'm a person with feelings, and I might not like being treated that way?
Most of the guys I deal with appreciate a low-maintenance approach.
Well, that tells me a lot about you.
Oh, do not even start trying to slut-shame me, bud. I do not apologize for having a healthy sexual appetite.
Hey, I saw the panic in your eyes when you realized who I was.
Yeah, because I also happen to have healthy boundaries between my family and said appetite.
So, where does that leave us? He asked. Other than me having no interest in a second date.
Oh, thank you for the clarification, she shot back. And I have no flippin' idea.
Look, we're adults.
These things happen. People have sex with people they don't know that well, and then lifelong relationships don't develop as a result. There's no reason we can't have polite, professional interactions from here on out. Can we start over?
He sighed. I suppose.
So, are you from Atlanta originally? She asked again.
Yep.
She frowned at his lack of basic conversational etiquette.
Do you have people there?
He took a big bite of chicken.
Nope.
Have you always wanted to be a cop?
Yep.
Okay.
Frankie could appreciate the appeal of the strong, silent type, but this was verging on rude.
Did you have any more questions for me?
She asked.
No.
All righty, she said, nodding and pressing her lips together.
Well, I have been on my feet for about 12 hours. I've got 3 people to prep in the morning.
And after this scintillating conversation, I've had about all the fun I can stand.
Frankie noted that Eric turned faintly green at the mention of her work. She sighed. Well, he wouldn't be the first man who couldn't stomach her job. This was just the cherry on the sundae of his lack of personality.
Good night, Sheriff. Good luck to us both.
Chapter 3 God had emptied his washtub over Lake Sackett. In other words, it was raining. A lot. Great cat-yowling sheets of rain that dumped inches of water on the town in a matter of an hour. It had been raining since the morning after her reintroduction to Eric a few days before. This was good news for Lake Sackett. Even though it kept tourists off the water for a few days, it meant more water in the lake and regaining coverage lost during the water dump. Of course, it also meant flash flood conditions and that the dam might even open a spillway or two, which would be a first in 3 years. But the town needed it, every drop. The constant rain put the snack shack out of commission, meaning Leslie had plenty of time to berate Frankie over her rude treatment of that poor, nice sheriff. Of course, it was Leslie, so her version of berating equaled a light scolding over Frankie walking out in the middle of Eric's meal and not staying to offer him dessert, meaning Mama had to go back and close up. But that was about as far as Leslie's disapproval went. Frankie's mama seemed to think Eric was a lost lamb whose social ineptitude was the product of stress and his lacking a mother to shove deep-fried nutrition down his throat any time he dared stand still. Frankie took to hiding in the morgue just to prevent further tales of that poor, nice sheriff who seemed so anxious about taking on the job. As far as she was concerned, if he couldn't handle the heat, he needed to vacate the damn kitchen. While a day or two of heavy rain gave Donna and Duffy time to do some cleaning and maintenance at the bait shop, the storm actually improved conditions at the funeral home. It thinned the crowds.
because people were a bit more reluctant to attend services of an acquaintance they were only loosely connected to if it meant going out in a monsoon. And for the people who did attend services, the weather lent a somber, softening mood to the proceedings. Frankie had never seen a fistfight break out at a funeral held in the rain. Plus, the families tended not to linger graveside, which kept things on schedule. Shorter funerals create tender memories, as opposed to emotional trauma. Frankie sat on the porch of her parents' cabin in the dawn hours, watching the lake churn under heaven's deluge and eating one of her mama's apple fritters. Her family lived in a row of cabins along the shoreline, centered around EJJ and Tootie's cabin, where the original MacCready homestead once stood. She knew it was a little odd to live on what could only be considered a compound, but MacCready's had built cabins on the old farmland since before there was a Lake Sackett. For the most part, living this close to her relatives worked. There were unwritten rules that everybody followed. Knock before barging through someone's door. Keep your opinions about a situation to yourself unless you're directly involved or asked. Don't leave your back door open, or you will be invaded by Aunt Tootie's wandering dog pack. And never, ever eat Aunt Donna's peach cobbler, because it is basically poison with a grainy crust. There were benefits to living this close together. Holiday travel time was minimal. Carpooling opportunities were plentiful. No one ever got caught without sugar or butter. But Frankie was feeling less and less comfortable with her own particular living situation. She was 28 years old. She was quickly coming up on that margin between being a late bloomer and people shaking their heads and saying, "Oh, it's so sad," when her name was mentioned. She wanted her own space. She wanted to take care of her own meals, her own laundry. She wanted to come and go as she pleased without hiding certain details from her parents because they would worry or try to talk her into just staying home because going to concerts or clubs was too much for her delicate system. She'd wanted to move out for a while, just to Marianne's old cabin 2 doors down. But every time Frankie tried to bring it up, her mother got all twitchy and teary-eyed. It wasn't that her parents didn't trust her to take care of herself. And it wasn't that they wanted control over what she did or who she did it with. They just wanted to spend time with her. They'd lived under the threat of losing that time with her during her childhood. And now she supposed they were greedy for it. Because her parents had put so much effort into keeping her alive when she was a kid, helping her fight through a particularly nasty bout of leukemia, Frankie felt guilty about putting them through the stress of separation. She knew it wasn't particularly healthy. Her relationship with them involved a large dollop of codependence along with their unconditional love. She knew she had it easy compared to most, including Marianne, whose contentious relationship with Aunt Donna had made several holidays very awkward. Frankie's parents didn't push her. She never felt like she had to meet their standards or strive to be more. Marianne and Duffy claimed she was spoiled as hell. Frankie liked to think of herself as an imposing but benevolent ruler. In a lazier person, this could have been a very bad way to start life. Fortunately, the rest of the family had beaten the MacCready work ethic into her. She was going to need that professional dedication if she had to keep working with Eric Linden. Why had he seemed so butthurt over their encounter? She was completely bewildered by his response. They had enjoyed themselves, several times. Every other partner she'd had liked the fact that she left, without prolonging the goodbye, or the expectation of another meetup. Eric hadn't seemed so different. Yeah, the sex had been almost tender, compared to how they'd started off, all wandering hands and insistent pleasure under the flashing lights of the club. She wasn't even sure what had drawn her across the dark room to his table in the first place. She didn't usually go for the gym-built type. She was so slender, read, upper body strength of a T-Rex, that she found big guys sort of intimidating. But he was this still, quiet spot in the constantly shifting sea of people, staring down into his beer while everybody else was writhing around like oversexed bees. She'd decided she could do with some quiet. So she didn't even speak as she held out her hand and nodded toward the dance floor. When they were alone later that night, he was still quiet, but focused. He was focused on touching her as much as possible and effortlessly stripping her out of her clothes. After carrying her across his packed apartment, he'd kissed her with lazy ease, stopping at all of her favorite spots to nibble. It had been so easy. No arguments over condoms or boundaries. Just skin gliding against skin. He didn't object to her wanting to be on top. He'd been so sweet to her, making eye contact as he slid inside her, touching her face as he moved under her. He'd eagerly slipped his hand between her thighs to help her quiver and shake her way to bliss. He'd spooned her as he fell asleep, for goodness sake. It was possible the spooning was what sent her thumb sprinting across her phone screen for her Uber app. But this 180 into a gruff, snappish douche in a pair of aviators? How was she supposed to work with someone like that? Sheriff Rainey hadn't been a paragon of professionalism, but he'd been willing to have a polite conversation. Then again, she hadn't wanted to trace the outline of the 63-year-old former sheriff's abs with her tongue, which she had done with Eric, extensively. She sighed, as her Uncle Stan parked the hearse in front of her parents' house, and she immediately started pondering unsexy things. Wet socks, global warming, quinoa. She had to stop thinking sexy thoughts in inappropriate places. If she wasn't careful, it was going to warp her emotionally. Stan stepped out of the elegant, if depressing, vehicle, and used an oversized umbrella to protect the crisp navy suit he was wearing. Stan McCready used to be, as Marianne once put it, the saddest sack to ever sack. He was all forlorn brown eyes underscored by puffy bags and a bow-shaped mouth that naturally turned down. He'd been a drinker in his youth, a case-a-day man, before his face got jowly and his hair went all salt and pepper. Unhappy with his habits and his lack of upward mobility, his wife Linda had left with their toddler daughter Margot for parts unknown. Frankie was just a newborn when she left, so Duffy and Marianne had more memories of their cousin, a bright, happy, golden baby smiling out of the family photos on the mantle. And now Margot had returned to their lives, and Stan was tentatively building a relationship with her, so carefully that Frankie was afraid he would actually take backward steps. Very few people understood Frankie's strange kinship with her uncle. Most chalked it up to the fact that he'd contributed bone marrow for a transplant when Frankie was little. Lake Sackett residents openly cringed when she mentioned that between the donation from Stan and then another from Duffy a few years later, she had three times the McCready running around in her system. But Frankie related to the feeling that the universe was out to teach you an Oprah-level life lesson at every turn, that everybody else got all the breaks. Stan had brought many of his problems onto himself with his choices, but he'd done a lot of growing up since he'd gotten sober. He'd done all the emotional developing he was supposed to have done before he got married and had children. "What are you doing here?" she asked, as he joined her under the protection of the porch.
Your mama got an early start this morning. She was worried about you driving in this mess, so she sent me to pick you up.
"You're kidding," Frankie sighed. "She sent you to pick me up in a hearse to make me feel safer."
"Your mom's not real big on irony." "So, Duff said you and the new sheriff are getting along like water and all."
"Which is crazy, because I'm a living delight."
"And the new sheriff didn't think so?"
"I don't know what the hell he thought, because he was a personality-free zone," she lied, breaking off half her fritter and handing it to him.
Stan took out a handkerchief and spread it over his chest to prevent any crumb damage.
"He answered no questions, not even professional ones. He offered no personal details and very few hints of opinions. It was like having a conversation with a block of wood. Or Wendell Mason."
Stan shuddered at the thought of a prolonged tete-a-tete with the town's former mechanic, who thought an extensive explanation of how to clean a carburetor was plumb fascinating.
"It can't be easy, coming into a new town where you don't know anybody, but everybody has known everybody else for generations. And you know you're supposed to be arresting those people. I doubt it put him in a real sociable mood."
"True," she said. "But there's a difference between unsociable and being a jerk."
"Maybe you're being a little harsh there."
"Harsh would be making him a peach cobbler spiked with embalming fluid or dissolving his body with boat-stripping chemicals."
"You seem to have put some thought into this."
Frankie shoved the rest of the fritter into her mouth and shrugged.
"It's possible you're not used to someone not being charmed by your particular brand of smartass," he told her. To a first-timer, you can be about as subtle as a bag of hammers.
I'm a living delight, Frankie reiterated.
Stan arched a brow. Frankie scrunched up her face into a resentful pout.
I won't try to dissolve him with chemicals, she muttered.
Well, that's a good start to any professional relationship, Stan said. EJJ said it would be a nice gesture if you went to the reception welcoming the sheriff to town tomorrow, because the whole family's going to be there.
Nope.
People will wonder why you're not there, she shrugged.
People wonder why I do a lot of things.
Your mama says there's pecan pancakes in it for you.
She'll make them for me anyway if I ask real nice.
Would you go if I told you it would make me happy?
No, she scoffed. Because I know that would be a bald-faced lie. You don't care either way.
You're right, I don't.
He pulled her to her feet.
But I do care that you get to work on time, because otherwise your parents will be chewing on my ass. So get your gear on and let's go.
Fine, she sighed. So why did Mama have to go in early this morning? The snack shack has to be a ghost town.
Weirdest thing. Yesterday, in the middle of the lunch rush, some poor tourist ran to the end of the dock throwing up, yelling about his ulcer. Somebody had switched some of the ketchup in the squeeze bottles with hot sauce. Very hot sauce. Your Mama was in a state. Wanted to call an ambulance for him right there, but his wife said he'd be fine. Just needed prescription-level antacids. Your mama threw away all the ketchup in the shack just to be safe, so now she has to replace all the bottles.
Frankie surprised Stan by standing suddenly and dropping her coffee cup.
Family meeting, she yelled, storming up the stairs to her room.
What?
I'm getting dressed and then I'm calling a family meeting, she shouted as she ran. Everybody's coming.
Okay. But you have to actually call people to call a family meeting, he yelled. It's not like we have a redneck bat signal or something.
Frankie used her phone and her words and called a family meeting, which EJJ somehow turned into a family dinner, because Frankie didn't have the corporate authority to call a business meeting. Also, she wasn't allowed to attend the business meetings after the time she tried to change the MacReady's motto to, because everybody dies. So all of the MacReadys, Duffy, Donna, Stan, Margot, Frankie's parents, EJJ and Tootie, even Marianne and her husband Carl, who brought their two boys, Nate and Aiden, assembled that evening for an impromptu family meeting. Leslie and Tootie had scrambled to put together a proper family feast in less than a day, complete with flowers and little battery-powered votive candles. They'd made a huge pot of chicken and dumplings, good old-fashioned comfort food. And since Frankie had threatened to toss Tootie's vintage Betty Crocker cookbook into the lake, they'd even skipped the usual argument over whether dumplings should be light and fluffy or thick, dense slickers. Frankie loved them both, but the arguments they had every single family gathering over whether it was acceptable to add sugar to cornbread were bad enough. The family dining table was spread with the chicken and dumplings, fresh-made bread, and three different kinds of pie. Everything to make you feel warm and toasty and loved inside. Tootie's dogs were curled up under the table against everyone's feet, disciplined enough not to beg for scraps, but not too proud to accept anything Frankie snuck to them. Mercutio, a mix of pug and Lord knows what, poked his oddly smashed conical nose against her knee. She scratched behind his pointed ears and fed him another bite of chicken. Frankie had wanted to adopt a dog from Tootie's pack for years. Mercutio, in particular, for the last year or so. The first thing she would do would be to change his name. But her hours were so long and unpredictable, she didn't think it was fair to take on a pet. Plus, Aunt Tootie wouldn't give her a dog, because Aunt Tootie skirted the line between animal rescuer and hoarder. Her family ate and chatted until they leaned back in their chairs, nearly comatose. It was a very cozy scene, which Frankie threw all to hell by saying,
There's a reason I asked everybody to get together tonight. Has anyone noticed some weird crap happening around the office?
This isn't about the whole Sasquatch is stealing from MacReady's thing, is it?
Duffy groaned.
Frankie, I'm telling you, sometimes trash cans just fall over.
No, no.
Frankie shook her head.
Though I still think the Sasquatch thing is... Never mind, not the point. Have any of y'all noticed weird things?
like the cricket stampede Duffy had to sweep up the other day, or the hot sauce switch that Mama had to deal with yesterday? Anything odd and annoying but not quite up to the level of criminal mischief or destruction of property? Situations that created more work for you and seemed to have a certain malicious but puckish sense of humor behind them? Like jabbing holes in all the styrofoam coolers so they leak all over when you put ice in them? Donna asked. Or putting lead weights inside the bobbers so they sink? Frankie nodded. Damn it. I thought we just got a bad batch. Donna huffed, which was her main mode of communication. No one knew their way around the lake like she did, unless you counted Duffy. She was a gruff woman who had taken the death of her husband, Junior, very hard, suffering an almost complete change in personality. But while the old Donna had been more comfortable to spend holidays with, the new one was certainly more entertaining to watch. Leslie very innocently raised her hand. Please cover the children's ears, Marianne. Frowning, both Carl and Marianne cupped their hands around the kids' ears. Would pranks cover something like switching the letters on the today's special sign around to say, Butter my friend's dick? Leslie asked. Yes, Frankie nodded. Definitely. Oh, Leslie said, blushing.
Why didn't you say anything about that? Bob asked.
I didn't want to worry anybody, Leslie exclaimed.
What were you trying to spill?
Tootie asked, petting Lulu the pit bull mix. Buttermilk fried chicken, Leslie said, frowning.
The frustrating part was that whoever did it had to bring some extra letters, including their own Y, to make the my.
I thought it was just some smart-ass teenagers.
Oh, it is, Frankie growled. What are you getting at, hon? Her father asked.
Bob MacCready was a steady man, still matinee idol handsome in his 60s, but anxious as a stub-tailed cat around customers. That was why he mostly handled paperwork for the funeral home.
I believe this is the work of Jared Lewis.
Frankie's sibilant hiss of the name Lewis was enough to make Marianne's sons shrink away from her. Duffy, Donna, and Bob groaned. Duffy actually scrubbed his hand over his face.
What?
Carl glanced around the table.
What is that about?
Carl, Marianne's high school sweetheart and beloved husband, looked like a scrubby redneck biker, but was basically a unicorn made of marshmallows and glitter.
There have been problems between Frankie and Jared for years now, Leslie sighed, sounding extremely weary.
Wait. Vern Lewis's boy? I thought he was 16 or so.
He is, but he is a prodigy at being a shit, Frankie insisted.
Quarter,
Tootie called, holding up a glitter-covered container marked Swear Jar. The swear jars had started as an effort to curb Bob's cursing after he'd been heard dropping the F-bomb through the air vents in his office during Andy Fricky's visitation. Sensing that this meeting might involve some profanity, E.J. Jade had the foresight to bring one home from the office. The proceeds were going toward one of those fancy coffee makers for the staff break room.
But he seems like such a...
E.J. Jade paused and frowned.
No, I can't lie. I don't like the kid either.
Jared was smug, in that way that teenage boys from well-off families in small towns always seem to be. He was unique only in his persistence toward one target, MacCready's. The boy was bound and determined to break into the funeral home to cause some sort of trouble. Leslie blamed a costume contest when Jared was 8 and Frankie awarded the prize for best costume to another child at the town's annual trick-or-treat event. But honestly, it probably started when Jared was 6 and demanded to be taken down to the morgue during his great-uncle's funeral. Uncle Junior had told him no. A teenage Frankie caught Jared trying to sneak downstairs, grabbed him by the scruff of his neck, and dragged him back to his mother. Jared had tried to kick her in the shins all the way down the hall. There had been some kerfuffle with Bob over the fact that Frankie bruised very easily, and he had not been pleased to see Jared aiming at Frankie's shins full strength. Marnette Lewis had always been stuck up higher than a light pole, and certainly didn't appreciate Frankie dragging Jared into her uncle's visitation like a naughty puppy.
It had made the interactions between the MacReadys and the Lewises rather tense, which was unfortunate, considering that Vern Lewis was the county manager, and technically Frankie's supervisor as the top county official. Usually, Jared limited himself to bugging her in October. For 4 years, he'd made it a point to try to break into the mortuary every Halloween. The previous year, he'd thrown a brick through the front window of the chapel, but he couldn't fit through the panes. When he was 14, he'd tried distracting Stan with a flaming bag of dog poo at the side entrance while he was sneaking through the back. He got thwarted by way of Stan being much fleeter of foot than one would expect of a former alcoholic in his 60s. Jared heard Stan thundering down the steps toward the morgue and bolted. Frankie wasn't even sure Jared knew what he would do once he finally got into the funeral home. Some teenagers wanted to break in for the scare factor, the daring of, gasp, going into a space where dead bodies were stored. Jared only wanted to break into it because Frankie didn't want him there. The bottom line was that nothing attracted an entitled kid's attention like being told no. And Jared was the type of kid to hold on to that kind of thing.
Honey, you know I like to support you no matter what, but you do realize that Jared... Well, he's just a boy, Bob said carefully. And he's the son of the man who is technically your supervisor.
Do you really think that matters to me? Frankie asked. I should be quiet and let Jared walk all over us because I might be impeached from a part-time job where the voters would have no choice but to re-elect me because I'm the only qualified person in the county?
You might want to soften your facial expression, sweetie, Marianne told her. You're emotionally traumatizing the kids. And Carl.
Carl nodded solemnly. So you think Jared is targeting the business? Donna asked, leveling Frankie with those dark eyes of hers.
Normally he waits until Halloween to start messing with me, but it seems that he's starting early, Frankie muttered.
Duffy scratched his chin through his gingery beard.
You do realize that the pranks are aimed at the marina, which isn't exactly your domain.
Duffy, what's the quickest way to piss you off? She asked.
Tootie rattled the jar at her. He thought about it for a moment.
Mess with Marianne?
Frankie noted that Duffy didn't say, mess with my mama, because Donna was terrifying and could protect herself from all potential messes. Marianne, on the other hand, gave Duffy a big kiss on his whiskery cheek.
And what's the quickest way to piss me off? Frankie asked, dropping another quarter in the jar. Clear out your Netflix favorites list? Marianne suggested.
Stan said,
Eat the last of your mama's Nutella donuts?
Say, the Black Widow doesn't deserve her own movie?
Aiden asked.
All valid points, especially given the glaring hole in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, Frankie said, fist bumping Aiden. But I meant that the quickest way to get under my skin is to mess with my family. Mama, you, Aunt Donna. Jared knows how much I care about you. And since he can't get into the funeral home, because the funeral home has much better locks and windows than the marina, the little...
She patted her pockets and realized she was out of quarters.
Jerk is doing what damage he can to the things he can reach. It's the high season. He knows that problems with the fishing operation or the snack shack can hurt our reputation. And he knows that will get to me.
You really think he put that much thought into it?
Stan asked.
I think you're underestimating the evil at work here, Frankie said. The boy would make a nun cuss.
Her dad asked,
So what are we gonna do about it?
I have no flippin' idea.
Frankie slumped back in her chair and took a long drink of sweet tea.
He's not causing actual property damage. The crickets were annoying, but the wholesale cost of the whole bait cage was what, $100? The same with the coolers and bobbers. Irritating, but no real expensive damage or injury. Even the hot sauce didn't hurt anybody, really. Jared's parents can claim it was bad chicken or something that made that tourist sick.
I beg your pardon, Leslie exclaimed.
I do not make bad chicken. I know that, Mama. Everybody in this end of the state knows that, Frankie said, patting her arm. But we both know how far Jared's parents stretch plausibility to get him out of trouble. Remember that time he rubbed peanut oil all over the doorknobs at school because he didn't think Cassie Hooper had a real allergy?
His mom said that he was trying to use all-natural cleaning products to give back to his school community.
Leslie harrumphed.
Well, it's not like the sheriff's department has the budget to test for fingerprints on ketchup bottles, Frankie continued. We're going to have to catch him in the act. And even then, I don't know if there would be any consequences. He'd be charged with what, vandalism? And his daddy would get him out of it. I doubt he would even spend an hour picking up highway trash.
Donna pointed out, Well, if you were nice to the new sheriff, maybe he would be willing to help you.
Not helpful, Aunt Donna.
Donna shrugged. Wasn't trying to be, really. You can't do much about this, Frankie. Vernon Lewis is a jackass. Jared is a second-generation jackass. It's a genetic condition.
Actually, I'm surprised you're not more concerned about this, Margo said as Tootie rattled the jar at Donna. The harm that this kid could be doing to MacReady's reputation is much more damaging than anything he's doing to your equipment or stock. All it takes is a couple of bad reviews online, and he's cost you thousands of dollars in potential business.
Thank you, Margo, Frankie said.
Things are just handled differently down here, Stan told Margo gently. We expect a certain amount of stupidity from our young people. We let them tire themselves out like overgrown toddlers because self-preservation usually stops them before they go too far. The problem with a family like the Lewises is that Jared never learned how far too far is, and his daddy has enough clout to make sure he never does.
But I thought the MacReadys were a pretty big deal around here, too, Margo said.
We have a different sort of power, Bob told her. We have personal power. We have people's support. We don't have control over actual government agencies.
Can't you put that sort of power to good use? Margo asked. Apply some social pressure?
I can go talk to his mama, Leslie suggested.
Most everybody at the table groaned this time. Marnette Lewis was known to lord her authority as the wife of the county's top official over her neighbors. She was not known for her reasonable or logical reactions to criticism of her son.
Well, figuring that'll fail, we can put security cameras on the outside of the building. Make sure the mortuary bay doors and marina are covered,
BJJ said. Like I've been suggesting, Frankie said.
Yep,
BJJ responded, his thin lips quirked into a smirk. For years now?
Don't push it,
BJJ told her.
I can stay outside a little later at night. Spend some evenings on the dock watching for the little bastard,
Stan said, reaching into his wallet and dropping a dollar into the swear jar. Tootie noted,
You only cussed once.
Well, I'm gonna be getting a lot less sleep over the next few weeks. Stan retorted. I'm starting a tab.
Chapter 4 The rain swept out like a church lady mid-flounce, disappearing over the mountains in full hissy fit. The skies cleared, leaving behind a landscape that seemed greener and fresher, if a little mildewy. The lake had shot up to summer pool levels that would have been normal before the water dump, and the lingering heat shifted to a tolerable fall warmth, though the locals knew that the inevitable boom in the mosquito population was going to make them regret this reprieve later. Of course, that meant that locals and tourists alike were running crazy all over town like bucks in season, overjoyed to be out of the house for the first time all week, and determined to make up for lost time. Fishermen took to the water once more, meaning the snack shack and bait shop were back in business. The non-ideal road conditions, combined with older people clearing away storm debris they had no business trying to lift, meant an increase in business at the funeral home, too. Snuggled under a quilt her grandma Sarah had stitched in violet and yellow, Frankie was napping off the effects of prepping 5 clients in one shift, including 2 coming in just as she was getting ready to leave for the day. She hadn't had the heart to leave them unprocessed until the next morning. So she'd worked more than 12 hours, come home, and collapsed into bed without supper. So even with the cheerful tones of the Big Bang Theory theme song chiming out of her phone, Frankie slapped her hand against the nightstand with a lot of hostility.
Yellow,
she mumbled, pulling the quilt tight against the chill of the full-blast air conditioning. Her mama always complained she was half polar bear when she slept. The very official and very unwelcome voice of the duly sworn Sheriff Eric Linden sounded in her ear.
Ms. McCready, I need you to come out to the little jetty at the easternmost point below the dam.
Smacking her lips.